My name's Andrew Besney. This is my first time presenting at TechEd Europe, so please be kind to me, and hopefully we'll have a good session before lunch. Have you enjoyed TechEd so far? Great. I've been to TechEd many times, and I think this is one of the best TechEds I've been to for content, and I hope I'm going to continue that theme today with you. We're going to talk today about security features that hopefully you've heard about already, but you might not have implemented. And I really want to get to the bottom of why you're not implementing these. And as a takeaway, if you can take one of the 8 topics that I'm going to cover today and implement them on a trial basis or a pilot basis, you will come away from TechEd with a value add that could materially affect your career, as opposed to adversely affect your career if something happens in your organization where you haven't implemented something like BitLocker, for example. So, let's make a start. So I'm from the UK. If I'm speaking too fast, please let me know. I know we've got quite a lot of UK people here. How many people from the UK in the audience, please? Put your hands up. So, not too many. Okay, so I'll try and keep fairly, not too fast. So the objective today is to introduce you to some of the security features. And really, part of the session is BitLocker. Part of it is some of the new cool stuff, things like secure boot, measured boot, trusted boot, these sort of things. I'm going to cover them in a second. Now, why? What is the benefit? How many of you follow football? Yeah? Woo! Okay, so we've got Champions League, for example. Would you, if you were in the Champions League final, leave behind your best players? No. That would be madness. All right? So we're going to keep our Messis and Ronaldos, Rooneys. Who said Owen? No. So, you're going to keep your best players and you're going to use them, you're going to deploy them on the field. Why? Because you don't want to lose that game. Now, the reason for this session is because every day in your corporation, you are playing to win. You don't want to lose data. You do not want to lose a laptop. You do not want to lose a thumb drive. These things happen, but taking some of the techniques, some of the things I'm going to demo today should help mitigate against data loss and security breaches. Now, you should know some of these already. Hopefully, I'll be asking you as I go through the session whether or not you've implemented some of these. Some of them will be new. Some of them you might have heard about but not really thought much more about them. And we're going to demo them. Things we're going to cover today. Modern operating system, what does that mean? We're going to cover BitLocker. BitLocker's quite a big chunk of today. We're going to look at Credential Manager, something you might not have heard about, or you might have seen but not implemented. VPN Reconnect. All right, so obviously you've come to this session to see these things. Let's make a start. What do I mean by modern operating system? Interestingly, this at the moment covers Windows 7 and Windows 8, and obviously Windows 8.1. Why are they modern? Now, this is not to diss XP or Vista. What we're saying here is Windows 7 and Windows 8 are built with today's threat in mind. You know, if you've got a Windows XP machine that never touches the internet, it's still a viable machine for now. Okay? And Vista the same, if you can live with Vista. Okay. What we're going to see shortly is the focus towards Windows 8 and its successors, 8.1 for example, has been the most modern operating systems and therefore the most secure. Some of the things I'm going to talk about today are only in 8, not because Microsoft invented them, but because the industry is giving us the hardware that we can now leverage. Things like Secure Boot. Okay. So remember when you're talking back to your colleagues at work, why are we using Windows 7 and 8? It's not because you want the latest and greatest technology. You want the latest protection against malware and security threats. Does that make sense? It's not just because you want the latest. Why? Because to some extent, this is a challenge we're finding is, and I've heard this many times from IT pros. I consult at the University of York in the UK and train and do other things in York. What we're saying is there's a lot of people saying, oh, we keep finding that the operating system changes. One day we're on Vista, and then we're on XP, then we're on 7, then we're on 8. And we can't keep up. What we're going to start to see is you deploy the operating system that is current at the time. So if you've got 50 new machines to deploy, you dip your cup into the stream of OS and you take what's available then. And eventually, over 3 or 4 or 5 years, you will end up upgrading or replacing all your PCs, and they will have a modern operating system on most of them. All right, so do dive in. Dive into 8 now. You know, we've now got the start menu. That's what you've been asking for. So there should be no barrier to diving in and getting from that stream of OS. What are we going to take today? We're going to take 8 or 8.1. What are the things that Windows 8 and 7 give us at the moment? These are the key things. Many, many shared features. If you've started the learning curve on Windows 7 and Vista, you are well on the way to deploying Windows 8. The same technologies are involved. Just make sure that when you do deploy the Windows 8 or 8.1, you use the latest set of tools, because that ensures you've got backward compatibility. Shared learning. You've done learning on this already. You've been to TechEd before. You've learned what's new, what's great. This is going to continue. What you learn today will help you in the next year. And when you come back to TechEd next year, you'll learn more and you'll just keep on topping up. And friends, that's the easiest and best way to keep up to date. If you drop off the learning curve, and I was a Microsoft certified trainer for 5 years. If you drop off that curve and you lose an OS, it's very difficult to get back on again. So keep topping yourself up. Okay. What is the difference between Windows 7 and 8? There's a couple of differentiators there. Hardware-based security nowadays. Inbuilt into the OS, you've got security. But more importantly, the actual hardware is secure. The firmware that we're now receiving on our devices is secure. And that's very important, because that's carried all the time. Yeah, TPM chips are becoming more and more available. Your Surface devices that many of you will have ordered this week come with either TPM built in or BitLocker enabled. All right, and we've got UEFI, which we'll talk about a little bit later. What do we mean by pervasive encryption? It means it's on now. It's always on. Okay? 8.1 will give you BitLocker enabled. You need to manage it. It's not managed by default, but it's just like your Windows phone. If you've got a Windows phone or a Surface, you've got BitLocker encryption under the hood. BitLocker encryption under the hood. Okay? You've got modern access control. What do we mean by that? That means we're moving away from passwords. I know that sounds really weird because we're all using passwords all the time. But we're moving away. We're almost coming back full circle to where we were a few years ago with fingerprints or biometrics. And the lessons have been learned from fingerprints. No longer can we simulate a fingerprint using the new modern biometrics. It's now touch fingerprints. It's seeing if there's a live person at the end of the fingerprint. It's not just a scan or a picture of that. Yep. So technology is moving forward very, very quickly, and the OS needs to keep up to date. And that is why, one of the reasons why, we've got 8.1 as an update, not as a whole new OS, if that makes sense. It's going to continually be updated on a fairly frequent basis to make sure that you are using the most up-to-date and secure system. This is huge. If you've got a Pro Edition or an Enterprise Edition of Windows 8, you are now able to use BitLocker. Before, it was only in the Enterprise. So, if you're using a business version of Windows 8, you have now got the ability to BitLocker your machine. Say there at the bottom, Windows RT offers device encryption, which means it cannot be managed using the BitLocker tools, but it's got BitLocker underneath the hood, and so is the Windows phone. So that's new. Yep. You've got no excuse now to put BitLocker on your machine. And if you think about the excuses we had back in the day of Vista and Windows 7, and one of them was, oh, my machine will run really slow, well, hopefully you've got twice as much RAM now, you've got more processors, and you've got a faster machine. So at what point are we going to say security as opposed to speed? Your machine is a lot faster than it was 2, 3, 4, 5 years ago. put BitLocker on it, save yourself a lot of hassle if you lose that machine. Some of the changes between 7 and 8, we're seeing improvements all the time. And this, to some extent, the business needs TPM. Back in the day, 2, 3, 4 years ago, TPM wasn't available on all your motherboards. It was a value add. It was a premium item on most computers. Nowadays, it's becoming a de facto standard. That makes sense. We can update firmware. We're now on TPM 2. Now, again, this is not a Microsoft technology, friends. This is an industry ISO standard. Remember what TPM does? It locks away your secure key. That's all it does. It protects that key from being read by an unauthorized source. So as long as if you enable BitLocker, the key goes in the TPM chip and your OS asks for it. And as long as that the OS is recognized by the TPM chip, it will then release it. All right? So TPM is very important, but it's literally a microchip no bigger than your thumbnail, and nowadays it costs less than a few dollars. So you're seeing more and more motherboards coming with TPM. Okay. Microsoft have made a huge difference improvement-wise on deployment and the manageability of BitLocker. There was a couple of sessions this week on MBAM. You should have seen those. They were how to manage at an enterprise level. So your BitLocker keys can now be saved into Active Directory. They can also be managed by the user. It's their password if they want to BitLocker encrypt their machine and password protect it. Now, we don't need to do that, do we? We can just BitLocker the machine and let the TPM look after the device encryption, if that makes sense. Because what are we trying to do? We're just trying to make sure that the hard drive in the machine, if it gets stolen, cannot be read by a third party. That's all we're trying to do with BitLocker. Now, yes, you could have extra form factors. You could have a password at boot up. You could have a smart card. But you don't need to do that. That's just additional security. And that depends on your workplace. So if you're going to deploy this, don't think I'm going to put all the armaments in place. Think I've got the main one, which is a TPM chip. Because the more and more password levels and jumps that your users have got to go through, the more likely they're going to start writing passwords down on bits of paper and leaving them on the machine, or leaving them in the drawer or on their monitors. So deploy things slowly and in stages. You know, go with just a TPM chip. That offers you excellent protection at the hardware level, and that's the key thing. Another investment Microsoft made was to make servers BitLocker enabled, so you can now BitLocker enable your servers and your SANs and your storage networks and your clusters. So that's pervasive. We're getting BitLocker almost appearing everywhere. Why? Because it's best in class. It's industry standard encryption. It's not EFS. It's not encrypting file system, guys. That's a different type of encryption. That is on your files and folders. BitLocker is all about your drive being encrypted in case it gets stolen. So there's three things I'm going to talk about. Excuse me. With BitLocker. BitLocker pre-provisioning, BitLocker automatic network unlock, and BitLocker to go. Hopefully you've all seen BitLocker to go, and we can talk about that in a minute. So what is this BitLocker pre-provisioning? It's all about pre-provisioning BitLocker onto your hard drive before you give it to your user. Because in the past, what happened was you'd give your user the BitLocker-enabled machine, and they'd be happy. They didn't need to know anything about that BitLocker, do they? It's not for them to worry about if it's just purely a TPM chip based. There's no passwords, there's no PIN numbers, it's TPM, sees the hard drive, it's married together. Now, in the good old days, you'd have to enable that once you give them the machine. And that could take an hour or more, depending on how big your hard drive is. Now, as part of your deployment, whether or not you're using WDS or whether or not you're using SCCM, or you know, even DISM, you can pre-deploy BitLocker onto that machine. And one of the key features we've got here is the used disk space only. You should have heard about this. This is really cool. Because instead of disk encrypting the whole terabyte disk, for example, you're just doing the data that's on there. In effect, you're saying, just encrypt the data that is on there now, and any other data that gets written to that drive, BitLocker that on the fly. All right, and that speeds things up maybe 40 times as fast. Because you might, if you're deploying an operating system, which is 15 gigabytes, instead of having to encrypt all 1 terabyte, you're just doing 15 gigabytes. So it's a lot quicker. All right, so that helps your deployment as well. Okay. We've got a new tool. We've got a tool. What tool do we use? Manage BDE. Quick diversion. I wrote a book recently. It's over in the MS Press booth. It's the Windows 8 configuring exam press. Who can tell me for one of these books what BDE stands for? Say again? I didn't hear you, sir. No? Yes, exactly. There you go. There's a book for you. Come up and see me afterwards. Okay. For you, sir. BitLocker drive encryption. The reason why I'm calling that out is because when you start typing it, you need to remember what it means. It's BDE, BitLocker drive encryption. All right? And we're going to demo that in a second. Now, when you pre-provision your BitLocker onto your operating system, notice here it's saying it's waiting for activation. So there's two parts to it. One is you deploy it, you pre-provision the drive, and then once it's up and running, you have to then activate it, in effect, turn it on. But that turning on process, instead of taking 2 or 3 hours, only takes 2 or 3 seconds now. Does that make sense? It only takes a couple of seconds, so it's a lot easier for the user. They're not having to wait for an hour before they can use that machine. And they then also become aware that their machine is BitLocker enabled. Okay. So you've pre-provisioned it. That's the point of this. Okay. What are the stages? We go through, encrypt a brand new volume, deploy the operating system, and then activate it to unlock it. And we've just seen that. We use the manage BDE, and we can script this. This is scriptable. This is you know, PowerShell enabled. We can do this in our PowerShell, or we can do it as a script. We then deploy the operating system, and that's using your favorite tool. Again, recommendation, best practice is to use the latest version of the tools. And then, like we just seen in the screenshot, you then go in and activate it. And at this point, you tell it, if you're going to do it via the command prompt, what protector. So what do I mean by protector? I mean a smart card or a password or a PIN, or just the TPM. And you tell it which letter you need to do. So this is looking at a non-operating system drive or a removable drive. The same managed BDE would work on there. This is interesting. If you're using an operating system, you can do so much more in the way of protecting it. They're both protected the same way, as in the operating system uses a TPM, the data drive doesn't use a TPM, it uses BitLocker. They both use BitLocker. Okay? One stores the password, or one stores the certificate in the TPM drive, in the TPM chip. So the technology is the same, the BitLocker encryption is the same, it's just when do we use a TPM chip and when do we not? So we can see we get a lot more functionality if we've got an operating system. Why? Because that's fixed into our machine, into our hard drive. Remember, that's the point of BitLocker or TPM chips, is to look after the key to stop that hard drive being stolen and being read. It is all jumbled. Okay. The automatic unlock there on the data drive, that is not the same as what I'm going to be talking about in a second. This is where you put in a thumb drive, and you can enable the fact that the thumb drive will be automatically unlocked if you put it back into your machine again. And that's quite a nice feature. It stops the user having to remember the password all the time. Now, I've found in practice it's not such a great thing, because if they routinely do not have to put a password into their BitLocker-enabled thumb drive, what are they going to do? Fantastic. They're going to forget that password. And this is the problem with passwords, yeah? This is why not just Microsoft, but the whole industry is moving away from passwords. Because the password, you give all the keys to the castle. with biometrics or different form factors, you're giving them parts of the password. Yeah, you're hashing parts of the password. So automatic unlock is a good thing, but also a bad thing. Just be wary of people forgetting their passwords. And once you forget your password, it's very difficult to recover it unless they've made a copy of somewhere. Okay. This is really just recapping here. Some other features that we can that have been enabled in Windows 8. We can encrypt computers, data drives, and thumb drives. Users can now change the pins and the passwords. This was something that the support desk wanted, because originally they would have to reset every single request. Now a user can change their own password. Of course, they need to know the password as well. Right? It needs to be unlocked. This is really for if you download this slide deck after the event. These are the commands. We're actually going to go and demo some of these in a minute. And we can also enforce BitLocker and how it gets used via group policy. So we can't turn on BitLocker on or off within group policy, so that when you log on, it's automatically there. But what we can do is script it, and we can configure group policy so that it adheres to the policies that we want. So, for example, you know, we can make the use space encryption the default, which makes life a lot quicker. So we're taking choices away because we're pre-choosing for our users. So if you want to deploy BitLocker en masse, do it as part of the setup, the deployment, or run a script afterwards. What you can do within group policy, and we're going to show you that just now, is how to fine-tune it and to make it use disk space only, or enable thumb drives that must have BitLocker. And that's really cool when you start empowering your corporate entity to say, we want you to use BitLocker. In fact, we're going to enforce it. Okay. So let's have a look. We're going to drop into group policy in just 1 second. This is where it is if you want to look at it yourself when you get home. And let's drop into my machine. And okay. So did you all learn the Windows key in X? Have you seen this menu before? Okay, there's some people not. So let's go into run, and I'm going to do GP edit. There we go. I'm going to group policy. So I want to show you the policies that I'm talking about, into computer configuration, and administrative tools. Sorry, administrative templates, Windows components. I'm going to drill down in just 1 second. And we've got a whole raft of BitLocker options here, based on, is it the fixed drive, is it the operating system drive, or is it a removal drive? If you've not looked at these, do have a look. You might find some of them are really, really nice and worthwhile having. So on the operating system drive, the one that I want to show you is require additional authentication at startup. Because if you're going to demo this and practice this and learn this before you do it for real, you might find that your machine doesn't have a TPM chip. And if it doesn't have a TPM chip, it doesn't mean you can't use BitLocker. It means you can't use a TPM chip, that's all. So if you've got an estate of machines and some of them don't have TPM, you can enable this setting, and that still allows you to run BitLocker. Let's just have a look, see what this allows us to do. So I just love the fact that when you go into group policy, you've got all this information, all this help and effect on each policy. But what we're going to see here is, I've ticked the box already because I'm using this in a virtual machine, and a virtual machine doesn't have access to the TPM chip. I've ticked the box at the top left to say, let me just show you there, allow BitLocker to run, to operate, without a TPM chip. So tick that box if you haven't got a TPM chip. You can then carry on doing you can still do all the other things that we were talking about. It just means that your BitLocker keys are protected by a PIN or a smart card or a password, rather than they're stored in the TPM vault, in effect. Right? So that's something you should have seen before, and it allows you to proceed. If you've got a TPM chip, you don't need to set that. It's all good. Okay. Next one I want to show you is enable. What we've got here, we've got enforce. That's what I want to see. Can you see this one? I'm just going to double click it and go into there. Enforce drive encryption. on the operating system drive. Once you do that, it needs to be enabled. Okay? And that will then force all your machines to be BitLocker encrypted. And that's a good setting. You know, what I'm suggesting as part of this session is you go away and you pilot some of these things. You don't have to roll it out to all 10,000 users. Pilot one department, maybe a very secure department, and say, look, from now on, we're going to pilot you for the next 6 months BitLocker. And use it, deploy it, pilot it, get the feedback, see how your helpline take the calls. You know, the pain, you need to learn the pain and teach your helpline how to deal with this. But Microsoft have done a lot of improvements in BitLocker to allow you to manage it a lot better. If you're enterprise customers, you've got MBAM, which is your management tool. That's going to save all the recovery keys in Active Directory. Life gets good once you start using the tools. So do some research. Hopefully I'm opening your eyes to some of the features here. So what else have we got that we can show you? We're going to cover network and lock in a second. We can configure minimum PIN lengths and minimum password lengths, such like. But just to start you off, you need to enable it, enforce it, and decide if you've got a TPM chip or not. So what do we mean by BitLocker and lock? So this is an interesting one. This is where, because remembering what BitLocker is all about, it's not about annoying your users. It's not about frustrating your users with another password. You imagine the situation. You bring your users bring their laptop into the building. They plug it into their wired network. Why do they want another set of authentication? They're already going to put their username and password or their smart card in. What this allows you to do is to say, in addition to my TPM chip, I'm only going to ask for a password if I'm not on corporate net. If I'm not in my building wired network, then I'll ask for a password. If I am, then I won't ask the user. I won't annoy the user by asking for another password. It goes further than that. The screen at the bottom, what do you think that means? And why would that be annoying? If you come to Patch Tuesday, for example, and you send a wake on LAN call to all your desktop PCs, and they're all BitLocker encrypted, and they all need a password, you're not going to get past this, are you? This is the real world now, where BitLocker meets the real world and fails. Because it would mean you'd have to go around all your estate and click insert the storage key or the password, which you do not have anymore, because it's a user. You know, it's a user password. So that caused you problems. It meant you had to wait until the user logged on and then deploy your updates, which is not, that's not optimal. So what automatic network unlock allows you as an administrator to do now is to do a wake on LAN, and the machine will sense that it's actually part of the network and boot. And that's cool. So what it does and how it does it, it uses quite a few prerequisites. You must have a WDS server running. It doesn't need to be configured. It just needs to be sat there running the transport service. Okay? You need to have DHCP. Because we trust our DHCP servers, okay, and we trust our WDS servers because they're on our internal network, this tool, Network Unlock, looks to those two devices and authenticates using a certificate to say, let me trust you. I'll now unlock my machine. So how does it do it? These are the prerequisites you need. You need a public or private key pairing, so you need to deploy a certificate here. In your demo, in your practices, you can deploy a privately signed one, but you won't want to do that in the real world. You should have come across this UEFI. You should have come across this already. This is the new BIOS, in effect, the new firmware that we get in a lot of the hardware. So all your services will have UEFI. Your Surface Pros will have that as the firmware, the BIOS nowadays, and that is crucial. So that needs to have a DHCP, in effect, Pixie Boot driver within the firmware. It goes looking for the DHCP. We mentioned already we need the WDS role, and it needs to be on a 2012 box. All right? You don't have to configure it, you just have to turn it on. Okay? Whilst you're on that 2012 box, you need to enable the feature of network unlocks. It's a new feature on 2012, wasn't there on 2008. enable that, and that will then respond. It's a responder, in effect. It's looking for those requests to say, I'm a machine on your network, I've authenticated using DHCP, I've talked to WDS because that's secure, I've exchanged my certificates, please let me unlock. And the network unlock feature administers that and looks after that. You need then to also have your GPIO set, and I'll show you quickly where that is, right at the top. If you don't do this, it won't work. It's as simple as that, guys. You need to enable that. If you don't do the final bit on the client machine, you'll be practicing all day, you'll be setting this up in your lab all day, and it won't work. So look at the prerequisites. There's a really good white paper on automatic network unlock for BitLocker. Let's go back and nearly finish that slide. Obviously, we talked about the DHCP server. That's a prerequisite. They don't all have to be on the same box. In fact, you don't want to be putting the WDS role and the DHCP server on the same role. That wouldn't be a good idea. Okay. Finally, on the BitLocker story, I just want to remind us, how many of us have used, well, we should have you all collected your Windows 8.1 update USB stick from Materials? Yeah? So we've all now got, if not, they're open till 4:30, I think, today. You'll get an 8.1 USB stick. Don't all run away now. That wouldn't be good. 16 gig stick, if nothing else. It's all cool. It's over at the Materials booth, too. We've all got USB sticks. We've all got USB sticks, and we're becoming dependent on them almost to the point where they're almost a throwaway device. They cost very little money now. And they can contain a huge amount of stuff of your data or your personal information. They're becoming very valuable if you lose them. You're like, oh, that had all my stuff. You know, how many USB sticks would you have at home now? 2, 5, 10? Have you even lost count? How many of you have lost a USB stick? Please put your hand up. Come on, I'm not going to shoot you. Okay? We've nearly all lost a USB stick. And we don't probably know what is on that stick. Okay, it's so long ago. How many of your employees don't even tell you when they lose a stick? Most of them, probably. Well, yes and no. They'll probably tell you because they want another one. All right? They'll probably tell you if it had data on there that they didn't back up. Okay? But they probably won't tell you if it had some secure company data on there because they don't want to get told off. So that bit of data ends up in the newspaper, in the press. Yeah? Your company gets a black mark because data got released. So what I'm suggesting to you is you can now enforce within group policy BitLocker to go. This enables your thumb drive to have BitLocker always. To some extent, I don't know why people are not doing this anymore. You know, you've got third-party tools, you've got BitLocker, whatever it is, your USB sticks should have encryption. Okay? You can, within group policy, and this is really, really easy to do, if you drop down into the movable data drive section of the group policy, enforce BitLocker on all USB sticks. Back in the day, what did we used to do? We used to have to glue up USB drives, USB ports. We did that, and that is just not suitable, is it? You need USB drives now, USB ports. But I've gone into machines, and they've had glue stuffed into the USB ports. How mad is that? Just deny it in group policy. You can even, if you wanted to, and this is not brand new technology, you can even define what USB stick make and model by its signature ID, what make and model your company will support. That way, you enforce not only BitLocker, but company-sponsored BitLocker drives. You know, I've seen companies that have got their name on the drive, and you think, whoa, that's like owning up to the fact you've lost your drive. Well, yes, but on the back there's a telephone number or there's a return to or a free post address on the back of the USB drive. You get it back, it's BitLocker encrypted. They're not going to hack into it, but at least you get the drive back and then you can find out who had it. Okay. So we can configure group policy to enable to force users to use BitLocker to go. And again, this is a short time learning curve. Once you do this and you explain to your users, we're going to do this because it's going to help protect our business, You know, most companies get a really bad rap if they start losing data. So start taking that corporate responsibility and maybe enforce it for a certain team or an OU within your organization. And if you're thinking, oh, this only works in Windows 7 and Windows 8, well, yes, it does, but it's also backward compatible to Vista and XP. There is a read-only reader as part of that USB stick. And so when you enable BitLocker to go, there's a reader that's in the default root that will run as an auto run if it senses that it's XP or Vista. I'm not going to do a demo on that. I think you did a show of hands on BitLocker to go. You seem to all have got a good understanding of that. So, moving on to Credential Manager. Who's never heard of Credential Manager? There's a few. Good. So this is not this really didn't take off, to be frankly honest with you. Who's used Credential Manager? Wow, there's three or four, five people out of maybe 80 in the room. But what you might start to do is use it more now, and one of the real drivers of this is the Microsoft account. So in Windows 7, it was there, it looked exactly the same as this, but what has really been an enabler is the Windows 8 Microsoft account. So that's now starting to become ever present. You know, you sign onto your machine now with a Microsoft account, and what this does is allow you to synchronize your passwords around your devices. Now, again, 5 years ago, we didn't have many devices. Nowadays, we've all got 2, 3, 4 devices. We all use, you know, and we want that seamless ability to go to one website or to one computer and not have to remember all our passwords all of the time. So what this does, it takes the fact that you've already authenticated yourself. You've already logged onto that device. It then says, well, because you've done that, I will give you your access to your websites and your passwords, and I'll synchronize them around the web with your username and password on your Microsoft account. It allows you to roam, in effect. We've mentioned already, it's introduced in Windows 7. Now, notice at the bottom, for you guys who are thinking, oh, I don't want this. Well, by default, it's turned off in the domain. Okay? It relies on you having to trust the PC. Now, that's a new feature in Windows 8. If you don't trust the PC, and this uses two-form factor authentication, I'm going to show you this in a second in a demo, is if you don't use that, you can't synchronize and roam your passwords. So there's more than just one step. You know, you need to log on with a Microsoft account, and then you need to trust the PC for this to start to work. But if you imagine, what is this for? It's not really for you guys. It's for your users. And one of the biggest pains that users report is passwords. Forgetting passwords, resetting passwords. Just the plethora of passwords nowadays. You know, as IT guys, we probably have 20, 30, 40 passwords in our head or in a secure vault somewhere. We don't use one password anymore. We use many, many passwords. And this helps us manage that. So, let me drop into my other machine and I'm just going to drop into my other machine. So this is my personal machine. I use this all the time. It's a virtual machine, and what I'm going to show you is go to change PC settings and go to my users. And can you see here, the saved settings won't synchronize unless you trust this PC. It's not going to happen. So if I drop out and go into, where's my desktop? Let's go to my machine and go to Internet Explorer. If I go to a new tab and open up Amazon, for example, it knows it's me. So it says Andrew's account. I didn't have to put a password in this time because that password is stored in my vault. So I'm going to do a quick search for Credential Manager. And we should see it here, Credential Manager. And we can see here we've got amazon.co.uk. And I can look at that. And actually, I could do a show of, so this is quite good, isn't it? Before you start going and having a look at your password, you've got to authenticate that you are the user of this machine. So it's not, somebody couldn't just come along to your machine and look at your passwords, but what they could do is go to Amazon and start ordering things, because that's been remembered by the browser in your credential manager. So this, you know, start using this and start enforcing the locking of PCs. People will start realizing that. But we know that already. We've been doing that for years. So that is now going to, well, that won't roam with me, will it? Because we saw already this machine is not trusted. Okay? It's not trusted. How do we trust the PC, and what does that mean? It means that not only have you logged onto this machine, but you're physically present. You are a human being. So let's just show you what that means. Let's say trust this PC. Well, just before I do that, go to sync in my settings, which is another feature here under PC settings. And we can see here, passwords will not sync either. So this is quite an important thing. So on all your devices, if you want this password syncing to start roaming, you need to trust your PC. So let's go and trust our PC and see what that does. It fires up an external website. It expects me to sign in now. Now, why is this not asking me? Why is this not already pre-populated? Why does it not know my password? Because this is not Amazon. This is an external website. It's not one I've already put my password in and said sign. So it's I don't want this to be remembered. So let me put my password in there. And now look, hopefully you've seen this before. If you've done anything like this already, you have seen, I've got an option. I can either email, I can text, I can call, or I don't have any of these. I'm going to try and do the text option. And hopefully that should then come to my Windows phone with a key code. And yes, I've now got a key code pop up, and I'm going to type that in. Let's just quickly unlock my machine. And so you can see, I've got to be present to do this. And hopefully, that's gonna accept it. Yes, it's now trusted. Thank you very much. And we'll close that down. We can now go into, if we went back into PC settings, have a look at the users, and it's still open. It should be, let's close that down and go back in there. It's still open, that's why. Go in. This machine should now be trusted, which means it's now going to roam along. It's not. Oh, let me log off, log back in again on this machine. Okay. I was going to do a. That's why I do a log off. Sign out and sign back in again, and this machine will then be trusted. That's my boy sticking his tongue out at me. Cheeky monkey. Alright, so let's just see if this now works. So you can see, 2 or 3 years ago, so your users, if they're not used Windows 8, will not understand the concept of Trust My PC. That's a new paradigm for them. You know, this whole idea of trusting and roaming of personal contacts, but personal data, but personal information. But what is this doing? This is reinforcing that this is the new way, this is the modern way. This is enabling them to become more and more. Still not done it, sync. I've trusted my machine. That should. It said it was passed. It said it was done. Let's just go back and see if it does it again. Put the right password in there. Okay, your device is trusted. So it should now start syncing on the device. Maybe it takes a couple of seconds to populate through. Maybe I have to restart the machine. But you get the point what I'm trying to make. It's a two-form factor trust. Okay. Not only do I have to log onto the machine, I then have to ask Microsoft to prove that I am who I say I am. Cool. One thing that doesn't do, which I'll just mention, go back into Credential Manager. What it doesn't do is roam your user passwords, your Windows passwords. It will only do your web passwords. Okay. So if we wanted to, so we can see now we've got Amazon, Windows, you need to manually back those up, so they're not going to be roamed with you. So that's a security issue. If you want to back them up manually, great, or you want to back up the whole machine, then great. But your web passwords will roam with you. Okay? Okay, let's just move on. Okay, so VPN Reconnect. This is a really, really small feature. But it's huge, again, for users who are maybe on the move. This is something that you could probably take away and implement fairly quickly and get a massive benefit from. Who is not using this now? Who is not using VPN? Because I expect most of you to put your hands up. You've probably heard about it, but you've not implemented it. Or you've just not heard about it. Let me show you, and then I'll explain why it's really cool. It was there in Windows 7, it's there in Windows 8. It's got better in Windows 8, it's a little bit more slicker. What this does, again, it's not for you, it's for your mobile people. If you're using a VPN, typically what happens is they'll use a VPN all day long, and it's great. The minute they get onto public transport, or they use a, let's say, a train that goes through tunnels, they lose that VPN connection. That's okay, that's what we've lived with for the last 5 years, 10 years. VPN connections drop every now and then. What this feature does is it automatically re-establishes that connection. Seamlessly. Your user doesn't even know. So that is cool, because it's allowing them to be productive. Yes, there might be a delay, there might be a few minutes, but if they're in a tunnel and they come out of that tunnel, they don't have to go through many, many steps to re-establish that VPN connection. This will automatically sense that it dropped, and it will try and try and try again to reconnect. That is cool. Now, why isn't this been really a big deal? Why haven't we all dealt with this already? It's because the hardware and the software in our routers hasn't been there. We need IKE version 2. That hasn't been pervasive. You know, a lot of our kit is using old technology. As we move forward, we're playing catch-up all the time. All right? So I recommend you use, you know, next time you install a router, check that it supports IKE version 2. That will then allow you to install VPN Reconnect. You can still have direct access. Direct access works just as well. Why would you not want... Well, if you had direct access, you probably wouldn't want VPN. You probably wouldn't want both. All right? Let's have a quick demo of how that works. So, if I look at my networking stack, and I'm looking at... There we go, workplace demo VPN. And I'm going to connect to that, and that will then connect my VPN, and everyone's happy. Now, if I want to look at the settings of that VPN, I go to my network and sharing center, and here's my VPN settings. Right-click and go into properties, and this is fairly straightforward, and go into security. Now, notice that the default is automatic. And we're not going to change that. But within there, what you'll have seen in 7 and 8 of Windows is this IKE at the bottom, version 2. So that's a new modern protocol that allows this VPN reconnect. If we look at the advanced settings and go to IKE version 2, that tick box and that tick box alone will allow Windows 8 and Windows 7 to reconnect. I told you it's a very small feature. It's a very simple feature to enable. If you've got the right hardware at both ends, okay, and Windows 7 and Windows 8 do support IKE version 2, tick that box, and you'll be amazed at how easy users start reconnecting to VPNs. It's done automatically for them. So again, this is one small tool that you as an administrator can pilot, can test it, can say, hey, guys, we're going to enable this. Okay, it's a new feature. I learned it at TechEd. Go back and deploy it for a small group, and get that feedback, because that's what we're there for in the IT world, is to go back with incremental improvements and make their lives easier. It's all about them, remember, making them more efficient, more productive. That's what keeps us in jobs. All right? just click that, enable that. Notice we can change the amount of time that we can cache the ability to do this. How long are we going to cache those passwords for? All right? Because it's going to use that password to try and try again to connect on that VPN. Okay. Let's swap back to my slides. Secure boot. Hopefully you've heard about this. This was a big deal last year. What we're finding is people don't really know what secure boot does. So I'm going to spend a few minutes now explaining secure boot. And really, this is going to revolutionize PCs. Every PC that comes with Windows 8 and it's got the sticker on there will have secure boot. Now, that has big issues because no longer, you know, we're moving away from the traditional BIOS into this super BIOS or this UEFI BIOS, okay, which allows us a lot more functionality. Now, just to be clear, this is not a Microsoft technology, guys. Secure boot is an ISO standard that Microsoft is leveraging. That's all it is. Okay? So when you think, Microsoft are ruining our day because we can't install Linux on our services because of secure boot. Well, no. Secure boot you can disable. And you can still install whatever operating systems you want. What secure boot does is verifies that the machine is a little bit like BitLocker in that it enables the TPM chip talks to the hard drive and it's married together. What secure boot does is marry the firmware, the UEFI, to the OS bootloader. And if we find that the two have been tampered with in any way, it will not boot. So it's protecting your users. One of the biggest threats that we had in the last 5 years, and this is one of the reasons why we use a modern operating system, is the rootkits out there can be pervasive enough to know, can infect our machine without us knowing. You don't know, we don't know, and we've got a big problem at that point. So what UEFI does and Secure Boot does is help mitigate against that. All right. What does it mean? Well, this is the example of what you're using now on probably Windows 7 and previous. You've got the BIOS, it will allow any bootloader that works to boot, and then the OS will start. Malware can infect those stages. All right. If you take a BIOS update from the OEM website and flash your BIOS, could get infected at that point. If you put any bootloader on there, that could be infected, and obviously the OS could be infected. So there's 3 points of concern there. With the secure boot, it's done with certificates. So this is an OEM thing. The OEM will pre-populate the device with a certificate for Windows 8. That means that you can reinstall that machine with Windows 8 all day long because it knows about Windows 8. If you want to install Windows 7 or another operating system, you will need to turn off Secure Boot because the certificate in Secure Boot that's come from the OEM, because it's got that Windows 8 sticker, is expecting Windows 8. Does that make sense? If you don't want that, turn off Secure Boot. Now, be careful. I've seen a couple of machines, when you turn off Secure Boot, it removes that certificate. In effect, it's saying, hey, well, if you don't want it anymore, I'll discard it. That could cause you problems if you then want to install Windows 8 again and enable it. You need to then get the right certificate back because you've only got one half of the story now. So just make sure in your UEFI firmware documentation, you know what you can do. Okay? Now, in Windows 8.1 and Server 2012 R2, we can now build virtual machines that have a UEFI firmware. We couldn't do that in Hyper-V before, but we can do that in 8.1. So, because when I built this demo, I didn't have the bits, obviously. I'm now going to show you a quick demo of my UEFI, how to configure it, how to change it. So I'm going to go into Control Panel. So this is a GUI version of my BIOS, in effect. I'm going to go into the HP BIOS settings. Obviously, it's secure. I don't want anybody to go in here. Put my password in there, because I don't want malware to get in here. You're all aware that Windows 8 now, 8.1 now comes with built-in malware antivirus, so it's a lot more secure than it was. So here we're going to go into the BIOS settings, and you can see there we can turn off, drop down a little bit. We can turn off Secure Boot. So again, check your documentation before you do that. It's there for a reason. It says you need to reboot your machine, which makes sense. Okay. And then just reboot the machine. So just be aware, this is a new paradigm shift. We're now moving away from BIOS into UEFI. Do some research, because you're going to be buying new machines over the next couple of years. Are you going to choose the ones with TPM chips? Yes. Are you going to choose the ones with Secure Boot? Yes. Are they going to be the mobile machines? Yes. Because you want to give the latest machines that are the most secure to your mobile team first. It makes sense. Because one of those mobile machines gets lost, you know, you're going to get in the neck, especially when you've learnt this stuff at TechEd. You've seen it in operation. All right. So, if at any point there is an issue with the bootloader or it's been infected, you'll get this message. I apologize for the quality of the screenshot. It was done via camera because, obviously, I couldn't use the sniping tool. Okay. At this point, you have a problem. All right? It does require a reboot. At this point, reboot, you know, go into the BIOS again, turn off Secure Boot, you know, or I've got a little video I'm going to show you. Ideally, you want to allow the machine to try and remediate itself. All right? But you don't really want to get to this point. But, well, if you do get to this point, is this going to be a bad thing or a good thing? It's a good thing, actually, because it means you've stopped it from infecting your machine. If you think about it in a perverse way, you know, your whole world is all about managing desktops and PCs and deploying Windows, yeah, and looking after the helpline. If someone comes to you with this, that's a good thing because it means that your Secure Boot has done its job. You've not just been infected. You can re-image this machine in 15, 20 minutes. All their data is stored in the cloud anyway, or it's stored in your data center. You know, it's on your own profile. Yeah, that's the new paradigm shift, is catch it. You know, even if you lose this machine, you stop someone from infecting you. A year ago, you'd have been infected. You would not have known about it, because rootkits typically are undetectable because they're beneath the OS. All right. Two of the little things about Secure Boot and its partners, in effect, its companions, Trusted Boot and Measured Boot. What Trusted Boot does, and this is a very quick overview just to finish off this little part, it makes sure that the Windows file, so this is going a stage further, so think of it as three stages. We've got the Secure Boot, protects the boot, so when you first turn your machine on, it says, hey, have I got a bootloader there? Yes, and it's a good one. Trusted Boot checks to see whether or not the Windows files are the right Windows files, and the integrity is there. It checks the signature. And then the next stage is what's called Measured Boot, which is, in effect, it's doing a signature verification on all your system files to make sure that they've not been tampered with. It's almost like, show me the hash of all those files. So let's have a quick look at what happens when these things start to go wrong. We go through this automatic repair process, which does work 90% of the time. So allow this process to run. Goes through automatic repair, diagnoses the PC. Again, we didn't really have this in Vista and XP. So 7 is becoming more self-repairing. 8 is even better. Attempting repair, and we then should get the log on screen. Okay. The last topic I want to talk about is Windows to Go. Who started to use this and deploy this? Not really many people. Why? It's a special case, to be fair. You know, these devices, I've got one plugged into my machine right now, is, you know, they cost $80 or $90. They're not cheap. But what do they do? They give us what it says on the screen. It gives us Windows 8 running on a thumb drive. And it's as good as that. These things run really fast. They leverage the technology and the hardware that's available now. You might think, well, why didn't we have this 5 years ago? Simply put, we didn't have the hardware. We didn't have USB 3. And even now, USB 3 is probably only on 20% of your machines. Your legacy machines will not have USB 3. Yeah? And we didn't have thumb drives fast enough. These drives are very fast, almost like mini SSD drives on a thumb drive. Okay? To get the right performance, you must use Windows to Go certified drives. I've got a list of them, I'll get on the next slide. It doesn't need to be USB 3. It can be USB 2. But all the certified ones are USB 3. You can then plug that into a USB 2 machine if you want. It will still run. It won't be as fast as USB 3. That's why it's not been certified. But it will still run in a USB 2 device. What this allows you to do is, and really to some extent, this is only for enterprise customers. So that's you guys. This is one of those jewels in the crown that Microsoft doesn't want to give to everybody. This is allows you to take a copy of your work desktop home. It allows you to give this to temporary workers or users that are running in remote places, and they can get access to a PC, but they don't own that PC. If you think about this, this now, it needed the hardware, it needed the drives, and it needed this paradigm shift of the cloud and remote working and not saving data to our stick. Notice at the bottom there we say the TPM is not supported, but BitLocker is. So whatever data we put on our stick can be BitLocker encrypted, all right? But we don't really want to be storing data on there, do we? All it is a Windows 8 version that's running on our machine. Now you might say, well, how do I manage these? You know, you've got 50 USB sticks flying around. Well, you'll manage them just like you would do any PC. It pops up in Windows Intune. It pops up in SCCCM. It is managed and deployed just like any other device. So as far as your administration, your management's concerned, it knows no different between a thumb drive and a real PC. You know, that relies on you how you do your naming structure. You know, name those PCs as, you know, Windows to Go, and then give them numbers at that point. Okay. These are the certified devices. There's only 6 at the moment. There's the 5 at the bottom, and then there's actually there's a USB drive now, which is certified. So these come in different ranges of size, so 32 gig, 64, 128. Like I say, there's not a great deal of space. There's probably about 14, 15 gig left on a 32 gig stick. So there's not a great deal of space for extra stuff like your apps. But this is where you then start maybe thinking, well, let's go with 64 gig one, and let's start putting all those documents and those personal stuff in the cloud, or use SkyDive and such like, and shared storage. Okay. So let me drop in and show you one of these. So I'm just going to come out of this virtual machine, go into another one. And what I want is... So at the moment, my bad, let's go into my... This is a virtual machine, and if I go into the settings and show you, what's actually happening is I'm using a pass-through disk. So this is a great way to demo Windows to Go in a virtual machine, is using Hyper-V and a pass-through disk. So the pass-through disk, I'm actually using my Windows to Go stick. Okay. Normally what you do is use your Windows to Go stick, put it into your host machine. Now, let me start this running, and then I'll explain a little bit more about why this is cool. So this is now running a virtual machine off a physical USB stick. One way to explain how this works is, I like to use the word, it's not a nice word, but I almost see this USB stick as being a parasite. It's sitting on the host. It's not, you're going to pull it away, you're going to take it away again. All it's using is the processing power of the machine. Now, I'm going to show you how we build this in a second. So this is my university, because I'm consulting at the university at the moment, my university build, now deployed on a stick. So we're leveraging things like WIM technology. We're using maybe WDS. We capture an image. We sysprep it. We then put it on a stick. That then builds itself, and it becomes yours. This is our corporate build. If we now look at the drive itself, you'll see it has no connection physically to the host. It's using it. It's been a parasite. It's just consuming resources. But it's not got any. It's not touching the hard drive, is it? So it's got its own swap file. It's got its own. You know, these drives start to run fairly warm. I won't say the early editions start to run hot, but these start to run fairly warm because it's been used. There's a huge amount of input-output going on these drives. All right. So we can see there. You know, this is a fully working version of Windows 8 on a thumb drive, which is ultra portable, ultra secure because you can BitLocker it. Yep, and really quite good. So you know, your users could take their desktop with their apps, okay, and take it anywhere. If they can, on holiday, they don't need to take a PC anymore. As long as you can boot to the PC, boot to USB, they can use Windows to go. Let me show you one other thing on how do we actually go about building these machines. I'm just going to turn this machine off, and we can shut it down. That's good. Because the tool, if we do a search on Windows to go, there's a utility here that will build your Windows to go stick for you. Again, you need to have an Enterprise Edition. You need to have a WIM file. Notice it's not found that drive. Who can shout out the answer why it's not found that drive for another book? What did you say? It's mounted already. A book for you, sir. Well done. So let me go and unmount that drive, and that's why I turned that machine off. And I want to go into computer management. Anytime now, I'm just going to unmount that drive. So into my 32-bit, and it's now offline. So I should actually be able to go into there now. Let's just do a rescan. If not, okay. Let me go and disconnect it. Oh, sorry. It's not offline. It needs to be online for it to be seen. Remember, when you use a pass-through disk in Hyper-V, it needs to be unseen by the operating system. Because otherwise it'd be locked by the operating system. It needs to be offline. So now that it's online, I need to give it a... It's got an F drive. That's fine. We should now see that. There we go. So it's now popped up. And the one I'm using is the Iron key at the top. We'd then go in and say next. It will then go and look for a WIM file on my machine. And my WIM files are on my USB drive. There it is. That's my enterprise base machine. And what I'm going to do now is click Next, and this is where we can BitLocker it at source. So we can use BitLocker and give it a password. And I'm going to skip that just for speed. And off it will go, it'll copy that WIM and unpack it as if it was a real machine. As a real device, it's now going to unpack it, it's going to deploy that machine. When I plug that USB into any new host, it will install the drives it needs to work. So there's a little bit of pain first time, but it's going to take that from its WIM, from its driver cache. Okay. The second time I boot to that machine, it will be instant. It is very, 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 very fast. You're not looking at extra drivers again. Okay. If you need to install a printer or any other device, it stores all those things on that drive. So you know it's not a one-use-only tool. You can use that USB stick on multiple machines. Speak up, sorry. It's better than... It works on a Mac. Fantastic. Okay, I didn't know that. All right, so... Hopefully that demo... I'm not going to be able to let it continue all the way. But we can BitLocker it. We can deploy any of our corporate WIMs onto there. Okay. So, I'm just about finished. I'm going to do a quick review. Then we'll open up for questions. I'll be around here for another half hour. I've got one more book to hand out. So, hopefully, you know, and those of you who do leave some feedback, please. Like I said, it's my first time at TechEd Europe presenting. I'd love to come back, and I appreciate all your feedback that you give me. So, what I'm hoping by the end of today when you go home is you start to leverage one of these 8 topics that I've covered today. I appreciate I've only covered them in general overview. But if you take some of those home and pilot some of those technologies, not only will you be a better IT administrator, manager, consultant, because you're starting to think more about the client and their security issues. Okay, you're also making better use of your investment. You know, Windows 8, sometimes I think about this like, we've all used Microsoft Office, hopefully. All the different versions we've maybe used, you know. Who's an expert in this room with Windows 2010, Office 2010, or Office 2007 or 13? Probably none of us. You are, sir. Well done. We all only use 10, 20, maybe 30% of Office. And the same with Windows 8. Now, the difference here is Windows is you give your users Windows. Office, you consume it yourself. You know, you self-learn a lot of that stuff. With Windows 8, your users look to you to teach them, to give them the tools that they need, and to enable the features. So we only use maybe only one or two of the features that I've talked about today. We need to empower our organizations to start using more and more of the technology, because that way they're going to be more and more secure. So hopefully I've shown you today some of the new features and some of the improved features. Remember, Windows BitLocker's got better and better. It's now easy to manage, easy to deploy, and even easier for the users. Start deploying it for your users to get the benefit from. There's a couple of related... So, you know, obviously, we get the end of TechEd almost. You're going to go home. You're going to look at these decks. You can download these decks and the video of all the sessions at TechEd. It's a great resource. A top tip that I use is to play it on Windows Media Player on Fast Forward. On fast speed, you can get twice as much content in half the time. And you know, because we're all IT guys, we can process that a lot, you know, just as quick. So start looking at some of these sessions that we've seen. Look at UFI. Look at the security features that Chris Hallam talked about earlier in the week. These are all the links. These links will help you learn and deploy these technologies. So with that, I'm done. Thank you very much for attending this session, and hope to see you at future TechEds. Please leave some evaluation feedback. Thank you.